And coming up in this week, Grumpy Gits, we talk about the new laws stating that all people must now have voter IDs to vote and how this affects the disabled community. We get talking with Koala, the limb prosthetic company who are making a real difference and challenge the stereotypes that exist with limb difference. We also get talking to Stickman and find out about how their products are helping change the perceptions that people have of people with hidden disabilities and overt disabilities and how we can be helping them better. And we take a deep dive into Snowball, the new app dubbed as TripAdvisor for the disabled community and what it looks like. All that and our usual crazy stuff with stupid questions and, of course, what happens next. Enjoy! The Grumpy Gits are proudly partnered with NADEX, Europe's largest disability conference.
Welcome to another fantastic episode of The Grumpy Gits. This one is sponsored by Tractors and Cornhub. Be careful typing it in or you might have to resign. I am always your glorious host, Adam Pearson, joined by three marvellous miscreants of mayhem. First up, using some new software and technology known as balancing Lego boxes, it's the wonderful Simon Sampson. How are you doing, Simon?
I'm very well. It's nice to be back.
It's good to see the regular background. I've missed it. How was Spain?
The first 2 weeks were absolutely terrible because I was taken to bed with the flu. We tested for COVID every single day. Didn't have it. Had the flu instead. And when you're disabled and you've got the flu and you sneeze and cough and everything and you've got no bladder and bowels, it turns into a messy situation. So luckily we've got our own place.
Is it like an explosion at a Pettifaloo factory?
It's not a nice scenario. Let's put it like that. I'm just glad we've got our own washing machine in our own flat. Because if we were in a hotel, they wouldn't have coped. But then we had a really nice week. You know, I started to recover in the third week, so that wasn't too bad. So we did manage to get to some restaurants and hit the beach once.
Because you did describe it on the last episode as an explosion in a Pettifaloo factory. But you just cannot remember because of the delirium.
Yeah. That was the build-up of mucus and stuff that happens when you... I'm telling you, Chris, it has not been fun. It's been firing It's been firing out of both ends. It's been like an explosion in a Pettifaloo factory.
I think that was some Grumpy Gits editing, which my mum was not very pleased with.
You told us your mum loved it.
Anyway, it is what it is, but thank you very much for including me in the last episode.
You're welcome, good sir. You are welcome. And moving on. If you asked several presenting critics about this man, they'd say, yeah, he's not the worst. It's Mr. Duncan Casburn. How are you, my friend?
That's exactly how my wife describes me. I'm very well. Yeah, plodding on the world of caring and all that kind of stuff. And it's, I feel like I'm juggling constantly, but very rarely actually managing to catch all the balls.
Are you glad that the Easter holidays are over?
I celebrate. You can hear the corks popping when the kids go back to school.
And that's not to say, I'm sure your kids are great and you love them, but by the same token, just, yeah. Like, all my mates with kids are the same. They're like, oh, go back to school.
I love my kids to pieces. At the end of holidays, it's the to pieces part that you're counting.
Can you just imagine, on one occasion, if there wasn't any school, parents would not be able to cope?
You couldn't, especially some parents. My daughter's gorgeous, but so much extra hard work that goes into being a SEND parent and having to balance the sensory needs and the, you know, I want to do something but I'm bored but I don't want to go out, I'm nervous, and it's very, very draining. And at the end of a holiday period, I'm dreading the summer holidays, because at the end of that you're literally just a puddle in a kitchen.
It's a good thing I'm an actor when I have to deal with my friends' kids, because I find myself after church every Sunday in a park going, ah, yes, insert name here, that is my favourite tree in the park too, over and over and over. And I, every time you've got to say it like you mean it. And then I go, oh, but you told other child that that was your favourite tree. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, I lied to her.
So, you're going to church. After church, you're lying to kids. Is that what you're telling us?
Ultimately, if you have a favourite tree in a park, you deserve to be lied to.
Let's admit it, it's not the worst thing he's done, is it?
It's not,
no,
but I still...
it's not.
I'm still glad I'm not in the same room, because I'm certain there's going to be some stray bolts of lightning any second now.
Anyway, let's move on. We've just heard from him. I'm going to ask him the same question and look forward to the answer. Mr. Chris Lee Smith, how the Charles Dickens are you, my friend?
Mixed bag this week, mate. Mixed bag. It's been really busy. Really, really busy. And I've spent a lot of time within these four walls. So, I guess kind of lonely. But on the other side, it has brought, you know, a lot to fruition. And I started using this face cream as well. Well, no, what's it called? Skin wrap. Go on, crack your joke, Simon. Go on.
You think you're getting so famous that you actually got to put makeup on?
It's not makeup. It's liquid skin peel, it's called.
I'm going to cast our minds back to when we started this and Simon's insistence that we all have to wear face cream on camera.
Yeah. What have you got, Adam?
I got Lizelle moisturiser.
What nice. Is this turned into? Is this the Grumpy Gits or Loose Women?
I don't want to have the skin of a testicle, so I want to keep my youth.
Yeah.
But I'm really surprised. But if any of our viewers have got time, go back to older episodes and look at my skin, and I'll look at it now. It's really expensive, though. It's like 14 quid for a tiny little bottle.
Real fucking QVC, real quick, doesn't it?
Your cheeks look so plump as well. I'm proud of you.
Please say you're talking to Adam and not me. I'm trying to bring these down. So, yeah, mixed bag. Good and bad, but better than last time we did an episode.
And next week on Loose Women.
What is the matter with you?
Just because you can't pull it off, Simon.
We're still talking about the face cream, right?
Either or. Take your pick. Anyway, let's move on. Panicking. Moving on. 3, 2, 1. Decompressed. Praise Jesus. That's my favourite tree. Ridiculous question time, Mr. Chris Lee Smith. Do you have anything that will not cause divides within our group this week?
No, not at all. We've got one generic question, which is still entertaining. We've got a very dark question on this episode, and we've got one that's probably going to cause a riot between the three of you. So, you know what I do. First question, have you had a Matrix moment? Start with Adam.
I think about this a lot more than I used to because I'm dramatically involved with a scientist. We have these weird deep conversations, and if we are in a computer simulation, which I don't think we are, I reckon it's going to be computers all the way down. And since we're the only race that hasn't created one yet, it means we're the dumbest all the way down, if that makes sense.
It does.
So I don't think I have. I don't think we are in a simulation, because if we were, we'd have made our own simulation to plug other people into.
Well, we got PlayStation VR, haven't we?
We do, but I'm not counting Skyrim VR.
I should clarify, Matrix moment is kind of like your very, very strong deja vu, where you go, oh, that's happened before, but what, I can't think of where, that sort of thing.
I often meet people for the first time and have this, we've definitely met before, I just don't know where. Because it was probably in a pub.
I'm just thinking of the scores of ex-girlfriends you've got and you making that same comment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't make that one. I think that one, that's the one I dare not make. IKEA for lunch, rock and roll. That will do, pig. That will do. Rock and roll. Chinatown, because it's sort of the same thing. Rock and roll. Have we met before is just too mean.
Okay, let's move on to Duncan.
I've had, it's a long time ago now, but the song Creep by Radiohead, before I'd heard that, I had a dream and there was this song in it, and it was one of those ones where I woke up and it was really vivid. And the song was in this dream. I think I've never heard this song before. And it was later that day I was at work and they had the radio on at work and the song came on. And I was, that's the song. That is the song. And I still to this day cannot justify the two things. I definitely never heard it before.
You might have subconsciously absorbed the song without noticing, or even the melody of the song.
Possibly, but it was like lyrics and everything. Like I was able to sing along to it the first time I'd heard it, because I'd heard this song in my dream. It was a truly bizarre moment. Yeah,
I'm going with that. Duncan wrote "Creep." That's what I'm going for.
I'm thinking that.
Oh, we're recording this too. My lawsuit against Radiohead will be out next week.
Yeah. Fuck you, Samuel.
And then I'm coming for you, Sheeran.
Simon, have you ever had that Matrix moment?
No, because it doesn't exist. Nothing.
There's actually a scientific reason for deja vu.
Yeah, it's your short-term and your long-term memories getting confused.
It's brain waves. Both sides of the brain, and they travel at they should be at the same speed. If one slide slows down, it has to catch up, and that creates deja vu.
I can tell you one thing that did happen to me, which isn't a Matrix moment. However, me and Kate watched MasterChef, okay? And I attended a BBC event in Birmingham, and I could have... It was just one of those kind of... I went up to this chap, I went, hello, mate, how you doing? And I went, and I honestly swear I went to school with him. I really did. And I swore that I knew him and went, you've been down to the local pub recently, you've been back home. And he hadn't got a clue what I was talking about. And the reason why I got him confused is because he won MasterChef the week before.
Oh, God.
And it's one of those moments where you think you know someone... and you've known them for years, and you think, "How you doing?" He just looks similar to someone who I went to school with, and I honestly thought I haven't seen him in 10 years. I honestly thought it was him, and it was just one of those weird things. And I went, "Yeah," and he went, "Who are you?"
That's being overly familiar with a bloke who watched Cook on the telly.
It is indeed, yes.
I mean, I fucking hate MasterChef.
Why? What?
No reason. I just dislike MasterChef.
Right, question two. The dark question. How do you think you're likely to die? Start with Simon.
Oh, absolutely. Heart attack. Look at the size of me. Yeah. I mean, it's waiting to happen, isn't it? I mean, I'm a rolling heart attack. It's probably good that I can't walk. I'll put more stress on my heart.
Right. that was certain. Okay. Let's go to Duncan.
I don't know, probably the same, but I'd really like it to be backwards in a Lamborghini flaming and something like that. I want it to be dramatic.
While having a heart attack.
Well, probably that would create the heart attack, and that's what will end up being on the certificate, won't it? It won't be written down as, died backwards in a flaming Lamborghini explosion. It will just say, had heart attack.
All right, let's find out what elaborate way Adam's going to die.
I reckon I'm going to wake up in a dark room, surrounded by my ex-girlfriends, and a voice is going to come over a PA system going, "Hello, Adam, would you like to play a game?" And it's going to be some weird jigsaw bullshit that involves IKEA, Chinatown, the movie Babe, and it's going to be awful.
I've actually written down a couple of times, because I've done a few, written some scripts and stuff, on how Adam is going to die. And one of the best ones I came up with is he's going to go up in the SpaceX rocket, open the door and jump out.
Nice. Although I don't think I've ever written how one of my friends died.
I was going to say worst friend ever.
Pause. Yeah. Rewind. Let's go back to the bit where you thought about my death enough to the point where you're willing to put it in a script.
Well, I've written a comic book series with starring me and you. Called Three Blind Mice, which is available on Amazon at a very good price. Called Three Blind Mice,
and you kill him off.
Sorry, no, it's a dream.
You're planning on killing him off.
It's a dream sequence.
Doesn't count then. Doesn't count.
Adam's the equivalent of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but, you know, disabled.
Okay, shall we move to question three? From one to four, one being the most, how entertaining are you compared to the other grumpy gits? Let's start with Duncan.
Oh, thanks. Throw me under the bus first. Oh, I reckon two.
Two. Okay, so you're the second most entertaining on the podcast. Let's go to Simon next.
I'm going to go two or three. The reason I say that is because I'm the one who I think is most down to earth. And I bring a bit of sensibility to this podcast.
Do you think sensibility is entertaining?
I don't think it's entertaining, but it's very serious.
I didn't ask that. I said it's entertaining. That's like saying, oh, I'm not entertaining, but I'm the strongest. It doesn't make sense. It's not the question.
Oh, I might be less entertaining, but I've got the best wheelchair, motherfucker.
Yeah. And finally, from one to four, one being the most, how entertaining are you compared to the other grumpy gits, Adam?
I mean, gotta be number one, right? It's either number one or number four. None of this, like, middle ground bollocks. People either roll their eyes when I come on screen, or they're like, that was amazing. More of that, please.
You are the two extremes of this podcast. You are either thoroughly entertaining, funny, or you are the most unfunniest person that has ever existed on any podcast. You're like right there.
On any podcast.
Any podcast.
Any.
As bad as that joke you told two episodes ago, that's the reason why.
Yeah, but Duncan wanted to use the tumbleweed graphic. That was my gift to Duncan.
He did not purposely ask you to tell that joke so we could use a tumbleweed.
I have one question for the group. Normally, we record in the evening, and if you're looking behind me, it's daylight, it's really nice, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. And yep. I'm just curious if everyone's been up, had a shower and had a wash, and if anyone is Winnie the Pooing.
Yeah.
No, I got jeans on.
I got jeans on. I'm not free balling.
Oh, I got my shorts on.
Are you free balling?
I wouldn't say I'm free balling. I'm wearing pyjamas.
Okay. Oh, that's fine.
No, we believe you.
Cookie Monster.
There's a cookie munching joke in there somewhere.
What are you saying about being down to earth and relatable?
I'm down to earth in my Spanish villa. Chris, I want your answer. I want to know what you rate yourself as.
Matrix moment. I don't know. How do I think I'm likely to die? A car crash that isn't my fault. And one to four being the most entertaining. Again, I'm going to be in the background. You know, I set the entertainment up, so I can't really gauge myself.
Oh, that's a cop out and a half.
So four.
You heard it here first. Adam Pearson, number one. Duncan Casper, number two. Simon Sampson, number three. Chris Lee Smith, number five.
Five? I'll take it on the chin. I hand out the softballs and you hit them out of the park. It's fine. But you'd be nothing without me. Shall we finish this segment?
So, voter ID is going to be a thing for the next general election. And it includes loads of things that are and aren't accepted, like old people's bus passes, unacceptable form of ID. Though it also includes things like driving licenses and passports that a lot of younger people might not have access to, which, in my opinion, skews the voting in favour of an older generation who statistically are more likely to vote Conservative. So, in my opinion, the whole thing is biased, bureaucracy, and BS. What do you all think?
I've worked for social services for, you know, eight years. And in that time, I've visited thousands of people in their homes. And I can pretty much guarantee you that the majority of people I visit do not drive because they can't, or do not travel because they can't. And so all those people I visited will have to either pay out for a voter ID card, For some kind of identification, which is what? Passport's what, 160 quid? Driving license or provisional is what, 80, 90 quid or whatever it is? Uh-huh. To go and vote. For me, the government are pricing people out their legitimate right to vote in this country.
What's really got me on the whole thing is that it is so biased towards a certain demographic, and that is clearly the Conservative voters. Because if you look at it, it's really biased against anybody who has a disability. Because disability affects often the ability to be able to get driver's licenses because you can't drive in many cases. It also prohibits people who've got hidden disabilities. So people who may be neurodivergent and can't, like, oh, my wife is epileptic. She can't drive because she's got epilepsy. If she had a fit behind the wheel, then that would be a disaster for everybody involved. So she can't drive. So she doesn't have that form of ID either. You've got this whole thing. It's attacking the divide that goes between incomes, essentially. Your different working classes that we have in the United Kingdom. And what we've got is people at the lower end of the spectrum who are less likely to have passports, who are less likely to have driver's licenses, who are less likely to have IDs and be able to afford to do that kind of stuff. And even if they can, they've then got to take time off work to go and organise these things, get into, because, you know, the places that provide these things are only available during work hours. And I don't know if anyone's tried getting hold of the DVLA in the last year, but it's nigh on impossible. So with that knowledge as well, even applying for a driver's license is going to take months and months and months and months. And to me, it's, you get this added thing of, why is it that the people who are elderly, pensioners, who are able to use, they are able to use their bus passes and stuff like that as voter ID. Why are students not allowed to use their student IDs? What's the difference?
It's voter suppression. That's all it is. It's voter suppression. And while they claim that it's to combat voter fraud, which is non-existent,
it just doesn't happen.
No. There's nothing there. And it is clear that they know by doing this that the people who are less likely to vote Tory are already being phased out. Their votes, they won't be able to vote. So it's clear. It's just voter suppression, and it is to withhold power. No other way about it.
But the result is that it's ageist, it's elitist, ableist. And it's ableist. That is exactly it. It is an ableist thing because it is really attacking at the heart. I mean, we had Supertansky on the last episode talking about what this government has done to the disabled community and the lack of care and provision and support that's there. And it's, this to me is just a glaring example of, you've got so much trouble that Boris Johnson has faced over the last months, and this whole, you know, Partygate thing that refuses to go away because he broke his own damn laws. And yet he seems to think that he's the right guy to run a country. And we've seen the devastation that's happened overseas with different leaders taking on different, you know, arrogant and egotistical positions of themselves. And I think we're at that. And I'm not somebody who's elitist to Labour or to Conservatives or to Lib Dems or anybody else that's out there. I'm quite balanced and you know, sit pretty closely to the middle, to be honest. But I can see this is just completely and utterly, we're moving toward a very undemocratic society. And I'd say we've reached it with this.
I would agree. I think the argument that was made about economics is also a really interesting one. Because we're already going to plunge poor people into devastation with a cost of living crisis. Well, people are already at the point where it's either eating or heating. And now it's going to be eating, heating or voting. Also, what happens to postal voters if voter ID is needed? Because I vote by post. And then what happens if your polling station isn't accessible?
That's a number of issues. I sat at a polling station the whole day in a wheelchair, and I couldn't get into the polling station.
It's just so badly thought through.
The whole thing is just so rigged, and I'm genuinely fearful for the future of what we're setting up for our kids. And I would like to say, we need to move to the Australian system, and I know that's typical coming from the Aussie, but in Australia, it's compulsory voting. Everybody has to vote. And that completely cuts out this bullshit. It completely cuts out because everybody has to vote. And if you don't vote, you get fined. So you're financially... It forces people to make educated decisions. They start paying attention to these things. It doesn't just float under. You don't get these, you know, they're trying to quietly get something through Parliament because people are actually paying attention because they know they have to vote for these people in the end. And it makes a big, big difference. And rather than this first-past-the-post system, it's based on preferential voting. And so you get a much more balanced perspective and it's much more democratic.
I love the Australian system. The main reason for it is the government is actually chosen by the people rather than the people who turn up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That.
But also you don't get this, because one of the most frustrating things to me with political discourse is people don't vote and then complain. And I'm like, why didn't you vote? I think, and it may sound like really harsh, but I think if you don't vote, shut up. Mm. You weren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up with this that struck me, I was reading up on it. This system is going to cost the government £200 million a year. So this is actually costing the country money for a system that's unnecessary, unwarranted, and biased.
I would completely disagree with that, due to the fact that people are going to have to apply for provisional licences, passports and driving licences, and therefore they get that 200 million quid back quite quickly, I would have thought.
Plus, if it means they retain power as well, that's 200 million well spent, according to them.
Well, according to them, yeah. But, you know, here we are in a cost of living crisis. Mm. People are screaming for money, like Adam just said, it's heating or eating.
Yeah.
And here we are, £200 million that could be going to support the less fortunate families who could really do with that bump up. That's not governing for your people, that's governing for yourself. And that isn't what a government is supposed to be.
No, I agree. Instead of like giving me a £200 loan that I've got to pay you back, that I don't need and don't want, so I let you go, stop pissing about with this kind of thing.
That's it. I'm not taking it like a loan. So we're struggling for money, you've got no resource, you're having to then borrow £200, which you're going to have to pay back when you're still going to have the same bills, but now you've got a £200 debt. I mean, what is the logic behind that?
There isn't any logic.
They're trying to ease it. So bad with money, this government. Like, this is £200 million. I dread to think how much the Brexit bill bloody was. We wrote up £11 million in fraud for things like PPE during the pandemic. Like, Rishi Sunak will not be looked back upon favourably.
I mean, now they cut the disability facilities grant as well for people from 50,000 to 30,000. It's potluck on which councils are providing that as well. So it's getting worse for the disabled people. They are. I mean, I don't normally bash governments so much, really, because I think one isn't really good as the other. But for me, the Tory government are really hitting the disabled community hard. Yeah. And I saw in the local elections yesterday, there was a really good tweet, and I can't remember who put it up, and it said, elections this way, food banks that way. And I just thought that sums up the Tory government. It's bewildering how bad things are getting with this government, and they don't seem to be getting better, they seem to be getting worse.
But tied into that, we can't protest it anymore.
Mm.
Because that's now illegal.
Welcome to Tory Britain.
Well, hey. And if you want to know more about how the Tories and austerity has disproportionately affected the disabled community, Dr. Francis Ryan's book, Crippled, is an outstanding breakdown on that. It's not an easy read, it's not a fun read, but it's an important read. We're now going to cut forward to future Adam and future Chris for an interview with Koala, a great little organisation that specialises in the production of prosthetic limbs. We're really glad they came on for a chin wag. So, future Adam, future Chris, take it away. And thank you, us in the past. And as I live and breathe, here they are. We're joined by the boys from Koala. Woohoo! Great. How are we doing, boys?
Very good, Adam. How are you?
Good. Very well, thank you.
Just quickly, would you like to introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about Koala and what do you guys do?
So I'm Nate. I'm one of the founders of Koala. And in a nutshell, Koala looks after people who have limb difference of any age, adult, little. If you have limb difference, we want to work with you. But it all started when I was back in university, when I sort of had this idea, you know, we thought it'd be fun to trick the uni into letting us build an Iron Man suit. And I know, let's say robotic prosthetics, we'll say we're building that instead. Fell into this world, but very early on got met, introduced to one of the best guys I've ever met in the world. And that's Alex, who is still with me today. So he must like what we're doing a little bit.
Yeah, you made it sound like we were practically married, didn't they?
I know. I'm so excited to announce this.
Are you down? So I met Nate at Imperial, seven years ago, long time ago. He and his cohort students. I was doing some research in a biomechatronics laboratory. I still don't even know what biomechatronics even means, but I continued my research up there. And I met Nate, and Nate and his guys said, we're going to build you the best hand you ever did see. It's going to have moving arms, fingers. It's going to be unbelievable. And, you know, not having any arms, I thought, this is quite exciting. This is going to be great. And then 6 months later, when they finished the project, it was shocking. What was delivered to me was like this really weird looking, it's a museum piece, I feel. It should be a museum piece.
But somewhere near to the bin, but yeah. I can't overstate how bad this prototype was. Yes. It was horrible.
But bless it, you know, Nate really listened, and after his project, he said, you know, what are you looking for? What do you as a, you know, an end user want from a prosthetic? And I said, look, if you can sort of create a cocktail of functional, comfortable, affordable, then you'll be on the right path. And, you know, hopefully we can develop something that's really going to be useful. And, you know, he's sort of run with it since then. And it's sort of turned into this huge prosthetic empire that he's building at the moment.
How close to the Iron Man suit are we now?
We're getting there. We started with making prosthetics for sort of below elbow limb loss. So if you have an elbow joint but have, you know, lost their arm below there. But every single person we work with comes with new ideas, comes with things that we want to then work around and develop. And so bit by bit, we've been building bits for other parts of the body. So we went to make something for partial hand. So if people have lost fingers, now we're doing above elbow. There's thoughts in the pipeline of doing legs. So in my head, I'm just like ticking off, like, okay, right, arm done, leg done.
Body part done.
Yeah, body part done. We're getting there.
Voltron assemble.
That's it. That's when I'll throw it in. That's retirement there.
I've been perusing your website, and it's all really impressive. But the one thing that really caught my attention, if you will, was Project Limitless. Can you tell us more about Project Limitless?
It has been an incredible tool that no amputee has had.
No, Koala is about accessibility, and that's at the heart of Koala, is being accessible to every single person on the planet who might need some form of prosthetic support. And it's a hell of a load of fun. Sort of a serendipitous kind of thing. So there's a number of steps that we just accidentally started doing. So when we first started working with Alex, we kind of assumed you had to make, if you're making a prosthetic, it has to be like a bionic hand. But at the end of that, we realized, actually, well, what do you want, Alex? And you really said it, you want something like comfy, simple, soft, easy to use. And so we started looking at it like clothes and like shoes. And so they're all fabric and nice. And that was something different. We completely fell into it. But what we then realized is that when you make something that's soft and fabric like clothing, you can make them very cheaply, but you can also make them really light and soft and nice, which is what kids were sort of lacking with prosthetics. Kids normally, when they had prosthetics, they had like adult prosthetics, big heavy ones that are just shrunk down. So that didn't really work for them. And so we got a lot of interest from parents being like, oh, can we use your soft prosthetics for kids? I'm like, yeah, mate, yeah, let's give that a go. Roll the clock forward, pandemic. And then overnight, limb centers across the world just shut down. and couldn't get anything. And suddenly we realized, I think we might be the only, because we can put these prosthetics like clothes in the post and send them to people like any other item of clothing. We accidentally became the only prosthetic company to still be able to work during the pandemic. And that got the attention of a bunch of charities in the UK, started by the Douglas Bader Foundation and a consortium of other charities. They essentially came to us and said, look, we're in a really bad situation. People with limb loss are really are struggling right now. What if we raise the funds and you helped us provide a soft prosthetic to every child in the country? And we're like, that's incredibly exciting. I don't know if we could do it, but let's give it a go. And then almost overnight, it got picked up by the public, and the support has been overwhelming. And so it came under the banner of Project Limitless, and it's simple as that, to just provide a prosthetic limb, a soft prosthetic to every child in the country who might need one or might enjoy one.
That's amazing. I saw the Joey range as well.
They're cool. They're really fun. Thing
I've ever seen. They look amazing.
They're just really like little animals. We're not clinicians like by trade. So I was a mechanical engineer. So when we were designing things, we didn't know what the state of the art was. We didn't know the right way to make prosthetics. So we just fumble our way through thinking, okay, what would make sense to us as laymen? And when it came to like really young kids, it's like, well, under the age of 3, what do kids want to do? Well, they're playing all the time. They're just playing and exploring. So shouldn't the prosthetics sort of be like toys for them? So it's something that's not scary and you know, stigmatized and intimidating, something they actually want to play with. And so, well, let's make them like toys then, something that can live in a toy box. They're my favorite. They're stinky, they're tiny, and they're awesome.
Well, you mentioned during COVID, and obviously there was a huge restrictions in place, you offer a remote fitting service. How does that work exactly?
Maybe for context, I mean, I've got some show and tell. I mean, Alex has prosthetics as well. So Alex gave me one of these limbs right at the start. Yeah, so this is like the state of the art. This is like a normal prosthetic you get on the NHS. Yeah. When did you get this, Alex?
2014, maybe, 2015. Yeah.
It's like this is modern day stuff, you know, and it still has like hooks on the end. So it's mad. The way you make these, where you fit them to someone, is you essentially take a cast of their limb, like if you've broken a bone, like they have like a plaster cast, they take that off, then fill it to have a replica of your arm, and then they lay sheets of plastic over it and just do this iteratively, get you to come in and test it until it fits. So it's like rigid. I mean, what's typical, Alex? Like, how many sessions do you need to have?
I think for that thing that you got there, I probably had four or five to get sensors in place and all the comfort, the socket, probably more actually, maybe six.
Is there like between, how long, like between fittings? I want to say go away, come back, we'll have a new one.
That probably took about 2 months, 2.5 months to get that from right at the beginning to the, from the cast to actually get, getting the product to the very end.
So that's the kind of, you know, ballpark. That's the fitting process. But when we started making, so that's one of these, but we started making them like clothes. So they're like soft and fabric and, you know, they weigh nothing. They're super simple. So they're more like sneakers, which means you can fit them in like 30 seconds. They come in different sizes. So all we need from a person is sort of a couple of measurements of their arm or whichever part of the body that we're making a prosthetic for. They can text them to us or do it online, then we'll make one to the right size, send it to them, and then they can just tighten it to themselves like a pair of shoes. So it sounds really complicated, but it's really simple.
What's the success rate on the remote fitting?
I need to get the exact stat, but it's something like 90-95% fit first time.
Wow.
Which I was talking to the guys, I was like, we need that extra 5%. But then one of our COOs, well, our CEO used to work at Nike and worked with like sportswear all the time. And he's like, no, you don't understand, like for fittings, like ASOS, like it's not 95% of their stuff fits first time. It's much lower than that. So we're doing pretty well. So, but we will get that 99. We'll get there. But yeah.
I'm no expert in prosthetics, obviously, but yours look different to ones that I've seen before. Is there any particular reason for that?
I think if we look at kids just want to wear something that's cool, can be individual. Yeah. You know, you style it to whatever you want. If you're into Pokemon, you can have a Pokemon sleeve. If you're into Paw Patrol, heaven forbid, you could have a Paw Patrol sleeve.
Whoa, let's back off. Why the hate on Paw Patrol, bro?
Explain yourself. Explain yourself, Alex.
Watched it for about 4 years straight. I think it affected me long term. But I think kids just want that option. And, you know, they want to be cool. They want to be inclusive. The best stories we get are the kids that receive a koala. It's individual to them. And when they go into school, all their peer group and their mates say, wow, that is wicked. Where can I get one? Mm. And the kid goes, well, you can't because you've got both hands. Don't be ridiculous. But, you know, to have them to get that reaction from a prosthetic. I mean, I've never had, well, I guess I have had reactions like that. Because when I fell ill, we kind of sold it to my little boy that I would look like a Power Ranger. He was in a Power Ranger at the time. And he thought, if Daddy looked like a Power Ranger, that's really, really cool. And that was kind of in my mind, you know, I wanted to look a sort of if Power Ranger had a relationship with Iron Man. I wanted to be,
dreams, yeah, goals.
Unfortunately, I looked nothing like that. I looked a right mess whenever I answered. And I realized that actually prosthetics are nothing like what you Google and what comes up on Google Images. Mm-hmm. And I think we just wanted to change that conversation about them to make them look interesting, comfortable, something that you felt happy to wear. Just change the
landscape. It's an essence part of you though, isn't it? I mean, you have something part of you, you want it to, you know, reflect that personality you've got and you as an individual. If you can do that with a prosthetic, I think you're gold, aren't you?
It's all about sneakers to him. He constantly talks about trainers because I haven't got any feet. I don't know why we keep banging on about sneakers. But
at me, Nike.
I'm right there with you, Nate. Huge sneakerhead. I got a good friend who lives in America who I only learned recently owns StockX.
And goodness.
What the fuck? Why didn't you tell me this earlier?
You need to cash in on that relationship.
I am paying full price like an asshole, and you own StockX.
It's interesting because I mean, like I always say this all the time, it's like I've got both my hands, so my opinion of what a prosthetic should be really doesn't matter. So it's just about chatting to people who actually use these things and doing what they tell us. But it was weird, suddenly coming into it, there were so many assumptions that I had about prosthetics before I ever met Alex. And they all sort of formed from watching like movies and then like all the pieces on like Good Morning Britain where you see all these bionics and cure silver stuff. There's so many assumptions that I had and almost none of them turned out to be true. So like the first obvious one was like, if you've lost your hand, you want your hand back. You want something with five digits that's articulated like that. And the reality is if you do that, it's so heavy and so expensive and so hard to use that most people don't use that. So that was an immediate assumption that we had wrong. Another one was like, as an engineer, when we were first designing it, we're sort of thinking like, oh, we're making the iPhone. You know, we're making something that's going to be beautiful. It's going to be perfect and amazing. But the fundamental difference is, as you said, Chris, it's like, this is technology, but you're wearing it. It's very different to like a laptop that everyone can have the same looking laptop is fine, but no one wants to wear something that looks the same. And you're not going to make something that fits everyone. So actually going like clothes makes much more sense. And all these little assumptions add up until you look back and you're like, oh, we've got this thing that's really different, but it's just from taking it step by step and only doing what people who use prosthetics tell us they actually care about. And you end up with something that's you know really different to look at and to use and to have.
What's the most innovative way you've seen someone use a koala product? Or what's your favourite way someone's used a koala product?
I'm going to go with kayaking for me, I think.
Yeah.
Because I love kayaking. I love cycling. I was never fit before I fell ill. And all of a sudden, I sort of found my way into this kind of fitness regimen almost. But I think my sport arms cost like 35 grand all in. And to see a child use a koala to kayak, and I'm thinking, I could have saved myself 34 grand. It was like, why didn't I do it sooner?
We get videos maybe two or three times a day from people doing random stuff with it. And almost every single one, I'm like, huh, I didn't know the prosthetic arm could do that. That's kind of cool. And, you know, I look at the engineers, be like, did you know it could do that? I was like, no, I didn't know it could do that. That's pretty cool. I mean, even little things, like going back to what we were saying about kids, like, especially children who've been born with limb difference, there's this, they haven't lost their arm. So most things they can do absolutely fine. you know, there's some things that you need balance for, like riding a bike. So, you know, seeing kids cycle and do jumps and stuff is pretty cool. That was pretty high on my mouth. But we gave some of the Joeys, the really little prosthetics out, the little koalas out recently. And so this little lad had one of the turtle Joeys, because they're all different animals. And he was using it, playing with it. And then he decided, like, oh, it's a turtle, so let's take it swimming. And so, like, they, you know, he started using it like a toy. I was like, that's so different to what you'd assume someone would do with this, right? Like, it's changing the conversation completely. And, like, it is now something that a kid's just engaging with and enjoying with. And then, like you say, Alex, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, people send us the latest extreme sports they're doing. It's like playing hockey. You know, little girl Lily was playing hockey recently. I was like, oh, sweet. And now she's like competing and doing amazing things and taking it to the gym and stuff. And you got that range, and everything's kind of unique and awesome. That I remember when I asked Alex the very first time, I was like, Alex, what's the one thing you want your prosthetic arm to do? And I was kind of thinking, oh, maybe it's like button a shirt or like eat or something. And he sort of thought, and you were like, I want to hold a wine glass out like this. It's like, that's amazing. That is perfect. That's exactly what it should be for.
One of those glasses that holds an entire bottle. If I can hold that.
Shit. You guys are going to be present at Nadex this year.
Yes, we are. Yeah, actually. And it's actually quite cool. So we've set it up. We're taking a bunch of these soft prosthetics. You can fit them like in 5-10 minutes. So what we said is the first 20 people that turn up that want an arm can have them for free. We'll fit them there and there. It's sort of a bit of a practice because what we do want to do next year is go for the world record attempt of most prosthetics fitted in a day. Because I mean, Alex talking, like, you know, these things take weeks and weeks and weeks. It's like, well, we could do them in 15 minutes. I'm sure there's something there that we could, you know, that we could do. So come along and see us. We are at Nadex. We've got a stall. And if you want some koala sleeves, then you're very welcome.
And Project Limitless is still up and running.
Yeah.
Who can register and how do they do so?
So we've just extended it to essentially anyone under the age of 19 can have one for free. So teeny tiny babies, teenagers doing some sports and getting into hobbies, anyone can register. Just go to our website. You'll see a link, a little banner at the top saying, you know, sign up for Project Limitless. Chuck us your email or your number. And then one of our limb buddies, who are sort of our folk who have limb loss themselves, will give you a call, figure out what you need and pop them in the post. Easy as that.
Well, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. If people want to know more, Where can I find you online?
www.yourkoala. So that's YOUR and then koala with two A's on the end. .com. You'll find us there. Sign up. Come and have a chat. We love meeting people and just collaborating on new things. So come and chat to us.
And there we go. Yourkoala.com. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. And I'm now going to throw it back to us in the past. Past Grumpy Gets, back to you. So thank you to our very good friends at Koala. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we'll hopefully see you at Nadex. We're now going to do a patented Grumpy Gets flash forward, and Chris and Duncan are going to have a wonderful chat with Stickman Communications. So in 3, 2, 1, flash forward.
Hi, Adam, and yes, I'm here with the fabulous Hannah Ensor, who is the founder and basically the person who is what behind everything for Stickman. And so, Hannah, welcome.
Hello, it's very nice to be here.
Fantastic to have you. It's fantastic to have you because I've been looking at your stuff, and obviously we both have, Chris and myself. Absolutely love it. And it's something that there's more to it than I think there is with these sort of standard pet cards and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a question we actually often get asked. Is it like PECs? And kind of the answer is no. Because the aim of what we do, so we create these products with Stickman on keyring cards, badges, etc. But they aim to take my normal as a disabled person and plant it into the other person's head so that they understand the key points, our key needs that are relevant in that situation, whether it's self-management, symptom explanations, look, I'm going to be weird, chill, whatever it is, that message comes across. So it started out as me explaining hypermobility, brain fog, fatigue, speech issues, all the stuff I live with, because I was bored of saying it on repeat. And it was literally just me and a friend. And then it grew because then other people said, that applies to me too. Can I have it? So it now covers all sorts of disabilities. and it's still growing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like we address that catch 22 when you've got hidden disabilities and symptoms. It's like if you explain, then that's all you ever do. Every conversation, especially if it's variable, has to state what your symptoms are. So then if you don't, and then it becomes complaining and everyone ignores it. So you don't explain, and then everyone has unrealistic expectations and stresses at you. And it's like, what do? And the answer is you get stickman cards.
It's one of the things that hit me, because when we're looking through it, there's this thing that happens, and I see it a lot, where people need to explain this stuff and it doesn't get put across in the right way. But what I loved about what you've done is that there's a real clear vision with what you're doing. And I love that you've chosen this really fun, this kind of illustration style, and you've used these characters, the stickman. I mean, why did you choose that? What was your thinking behind it?
Part of it was actually because I started drawing stickmen when I was too uncoordinated to draw anything else. So I got good at stickmen. But it also really helps to normalise disability, because it makes it relatable. You know, someone looks at the stickman and go, I felt like that.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like tearing my hair out. I felt like...
It really conveys the emotion. That's something I really picked up, because you think stickman, but you've actually found a way to do it that it really draws out the emotion, the feeling, the what's behind the expression, almost.
We've worked hard to do that, and I think it works. And from what you said, it does.
I think so, yeah.
That is pretty much why you've chosen it. And medical stuff is so often very official, very medical, and life isn't. Life is funny and ridiculous and tough and all sorts. And I think, why not use something that is relatable across the board instead of... Well,
and it cuts through all of the jargon, doesn't it, that just comes out all the time, and the, you know, the three-letter acronyms, the TLAs, as I call them, they're everywhere, and it cuts through all that. I really, really like that.
It also delivers like a softer side that's sometimes needed. As you said, it's big seriousness, and all of a sudden you've got this to portray it across, and there's a fun side to it which makes it easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I mean, I've literally had, you know, been sat at a cafe with my head down on the table because I need a time out, but I'm a wheelchair user, so people see me, and of course the gut reaction is going to be, oh my word, the wheelchair user's dead. So of course you can't then have your rest, because everyone's interrupting you to get your breathing.
Can you just get one and stick it on your head? So as you have the stickman explaining,
I think that's a new for your range, is get a cap where you can just pop it in the top, and if they bother you, just kind of raise your head and just point to it like that.
I literally have my head down on the desk on the cafe table, and I hear the footsteps walk up. There's a pause and a chuckle, and they walk off. That's how the cards work. It's great.
They work. That's amazing. I went onto your website, and I was we had a brief conversation earlier about me wanting the t-shirt, but because I'm too fat, you didn't actually have it in my size.
You're too fat.
They only had it in small, and I really wanted this t-shirt. It was on the sale part. But what products do you sell, and how can they be purchased?
So everything's on our website. And we have a couple of t-shirts, a hoodie design, which is a really good hoodie. I'm totally biased, but it's really good. And then we have some badges, keyrings, keyring cards, wristbands, and other things, all with these stickmen with messages to convey. So everything's on the website, stickmancommunications.co.uk.
Well, and it's just something, you are at Nadex, which of course we are partnered with for this. So you're actually going to be at Nadex, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
How will people find you at Nadex?
So we'll be at stand B34, which is in the Disability Horizons marketplace area. So you go through the front doors, and it's just on the left.
That's fantastic, because that's a fantastic new section they're doing this year, which is, of course, the smaller businesses. We will make sure we seek you out when we hit Nadex as well. We're going to be wandering around, and hopefully we'll get to pick you.
You just have to hope there aren't so many people at my stand that you can't actually reach it.
This could be a problem. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us. And please, everybody, head over to the website and check out the stuff. It is fantastic. And it's a really, really good way that disability can be communicated in a really fun, fresh, original, but mostly inoffensive way as well. That it just gets the point across without, and it cuts through all the crap. So please do go check it out. It's fantastic. We'll hand over back to the podcast now. And Adam.
And if you'd like that and want to know more, you can visit their website. And we also have a discount code. Woo! I know. It's coming up on screen now. If you go bang in that code, you can get 10% off everything on their website. Time now to throw over to our good friends at Nadex for our regularly scheduled update. Here is the Nadex news.
Hi guys, this is Steve from Nadex, the UK's big event for the disabled community. And it's great to give you another short snippet of what to expect at this year's event in July. In particular, I wanted to tell you about a brand new feature we have just announced called the Village Green, which is a live performance and activity space. Performing live at the show, we will have Sign Along With Us, the amazing sign language choir, David Walliams' Golden Buzzer Act and eventual runners-up in Britain's Got Talent a couple of years back. We've also got an appearance from Kate Stanforth, who's a really incredible dancer and an amazing advocate for dance within the disabled community. We've also got a performance from the Music Man Project, who provide access to music for children and adults with learning disabilities. And of course, we're welcoming back longtime friends of Nadex, the Grumpy Gits, who will be recording a podcast live at the show. We'll be back soon with more exciting Nadex-related updates, but in the meantime, the event takes place at the Birmingham NEC on the 6th and 7th of July, and tickets are completely free. Just visit www.nadex.co.uk to register. Hope to see you there.
Going to throw over now to Mr. Simon Sampson. Simon, I hear you have a new app.
I do. For people who don't know my story, I became disabled in 2014. And a couple of years later, I set up Ability Access. And today, Ability Access Facebook page has about 100,000 followers. And from that, we've got the Snowball app, which is awesome. So what this is an app where you'll be able to download by the end of the month, the end of May. Okay, you can go to our holding page to register interest. It's my.snowball.community. And you just register your details. And what this is it's an app where you can turn up in London, you can turn up in Leicester, and select your location, and all the disabled facilities will pop up where you are to make it easier for disabled people to go out and about.
Is there an advert for Snowball, Simon?
There is, and we've got some great ambassadors. 7-time gold medalist, Paralympian, Hannah Cockcroft, and Aaron Phipps, Tokyo wheelchair champion for wheelchair rugby, have done this fantastic video for us.
Great workout. Do you want to go get a bite to eat?
What are you thinking?
That brand new place on the corner.
Apparently they don't have a wheelchair ramp.
Who says that?
Snowball.
What's Snowball?
It's an app dedicated to the disabled community. It shows places to have good access.
Cool.
Yeah, it gives people the confidence to go out and socialise with ease.
So why is it called
Snowball? Because the more people that use Snowball, the better it's for everybody. You can leave reviews, add pictures, and even say if you go back.
Oh, so like the Snowball effect.
Snowball.
Try the app today and socialise with ease.
So how long has this been in development for?
So Ability Access started in 2016, and the reason it started was to basically raise awareness of the lack of disabled facilities in Leicester. And Snowball is just another development of it. So it's been in development for about 2016. It's been 6-7 years now. But we've got quite a large community coming on board as well. So we've got supermarkets coming on board, we've got high street stores coming on board to register, and they're going to be registering their details. So the reason it's called Snowball is because the more people use it, the better it is for everyone. So the more people leave, you can leave reviews, you can upload photos, and actually, more importantly, you can actually say if you'd go back to that store. So for example, JD Sports or Sports Direct is probably more appropriate. You try and get around Sports Direct in a wheelchair, it's almost impossible, but they say they're accessible. I wouldn't go back to Sports Direct by choice. If I need to order anything from them, I'll order it online. And it's just to kind of give you that information that you need to go out and about. But also, we've got Changing Places coming on board who are going to upload their information. So you can find a active disabled toilet in your location quite easily. And it's just that vital bit of information that people need to have an accessible life. And this is the first global app. So what we've done, we've linked it to Google. Okay, so whether you're in Sydney, if you're in New York, if you're in London, if you're in Ottawa, if you're in South Africa, It doesn't matter where you are. You can upload that restaurant, pub, club, you know, theatre, cinema, venue you're going to, the little shop on the corner, whichever you want, to the post office, and put a review on whether or not it's accessible. And again, the more people use it, the better it will be to improve the quality of life for every disabled person out there, but also their carers and their family members as well.
Brilliant. I think that's really good. Sort of like TripAdvisor for disabled people. Like a one-stop shop for the community, by the community. I like it.
To give you an example, is I've been out with Adam many times in London, and what we if we go into a restaurant or we're going for a meal out, we're determined by the venue on whether it's accessible or not, whether or not we want to go there for a meal. It's because me and Kate have spent an hour going around Covent Garden trying to find an accessible restaurant, and we just end up in Bella Italia because we know it's accessible. It's a chain, rather than going to independent places or new places or exciting places we want to go. Mm-hmm. So it gives you more choice on where you want to go and what you want to do.
I mean, from my experience, it's easier to get a pug into restaurants in Covent Garden than it is a wheelchair.
Yeah, dogs are more welcomed in Covent Garden than disabled people. It is true.
There we go. Fly.snowball.community. I will certainly be checking it out. I advise everyone goes and does the same. Your one-stop shop for planning your day with a disability. And now we move on to what is fast becoming my favourite segment of the show. It is What Happens Next?
Okay, so first clip. What happens next?
I think he's going to get sandwiched between the two balls.
Between the two what?
Two balls.
Two balls, right, okay. Adam, your answer next?
I reckon he gets out of the way and the two balls collide and knock each other out.
Oh,
ooh, that's a good one.
I like that answer, yeah. Duncan?
I reckon the fence collapses. I reckon it's completely not what we're expecting. I reckon the fence is going to collapse and everyone falls over.
Okay, let's find out.
Oh,
damn.
Yeah, well, that's going to hurt.
That was,
I'm sure.
That was sadly what you'd expect.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. I was literally quarter of a second off with that.
It's what I expected, but it's what I wanted.
Okay. Next one.
Give my fucking phone back.
No.
Don't go to my group chat, please.
No.
That's for the boys only.
What happens next? Let's start with Duncan this time.
I reckon she goes to throw it at him and it bounces off the window and knocks her out.
Okay. So she's a bad shot. Adam?
I'm going to go with my regular answer that an eagle swoops in and takes her away.
Okay. So, yeah, okay, we'll take that as an answer. Don't forget, she's got his phone and she's going through the group chats. Simon, what's your answer for that one?
I think she puts a message on there and then destroys the phone.
Okay, let's find out.
Stop! Open this chicken door!
You and your homie send pictures of your balls to each other? That's fucking weird.
It's not weird, it's the boys.
So they know what your balls look like?
Fuck yeah.
Adam, have you ever sent a picture of your balls to anyone?
No, what I have done, when we were, I think it was like, I was 18.
You can't say that and then what I have done.
we were 18 and we were in like a Wetherspoons, and this was back when no one locked their phone in any meaningful way. And one of my friends pissed me off. And so he went to the toilet and left his phone on the table. So I then picked up his phone, found his girlfriend in his phone book, and I texted his girlfriend saying, "Don't worry, she'll never find out. Kiss, kiss, kiss." And sent it. And I thought she'd know it was me pissing about. She then turns up in this Wetherspoons and goes, "What won't she find out, Chris? What won't she fucking find out?" Throws his drink at him. and leaves. And I'm like, oh well.
Yeah.
I did a good thing today.
Oh, you're going to need a priest in this life at some point.
Right, clip three. What happens next? Let's start with Adam this time.
I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing
someone,
happens.
Someone throws a snowball.
Someone throws a snowball. Okay. Simon, what do you think happens next?
I think he goes for a nice swim in the swimming pool.
Okay. Duncan, what do you think happens next?
I'm kind of relieved Adam didn't take it. I'm going to say Noogle sweeps down and grabs it away.
Okay, let's find out.
Yeah, he's having a good time. That's brilliant.
Oh, these are great.
That's brilliant.
That's gold.
That has been my favourite What Happens Next thus far. You've excelled yourself, Chris. Well done. Well, there we go. Another fantastic episode of The Grumpy Gits comes to an end. All it leaves me to do is to say thanks for watching, follow us on all our socials, all in the description. From me, Adam Pearson, from him, Duncan Casburn, from him, Simon Sampson, and even from him, Chris Lee Smith, we bid you a fond farewell. See you on the next one.
The Grumpy Gits are proudly partnered with NAIDEX, Europe's largest disability conference.